So we here in New England are dealing with sub-freezing temperatures today, but what better way to thaw out from the cold than with some hot soup?
If you would like to try the mock turtle soup, I'm quite certain that Eric over here would love to serve it for you.
First of all, let me emphasize, this is mock turtle soup. Not real turtle, mock turtle. And second, allow me to introduce you to the chef.
My name is Scott Herrett, and we're at Kitchen at 560 Tremont in the south end of Boston.
And Kitchen isn't just any kitchen. It's a new restaurant that specializes in very old recipes. Herrett says there's a lot about how we view food now, using authentic local ingredients, not letting any part of an animal go to waste, that kind of thing. All that's right in line with how people ate centuries ago. Take, for example, the mock turtle soup and a recipe from circa 1860.
This soup takes us about 5 days to prepare, a labor of love. I mean, the origin of the dish is that there used to be turtle soup, and turtle soup got very expensive and got very difficult to find the turtles to make the soup. So they created a dish called mock turtle soup that got so popular that it actually appears in Alice in Wonderland is the mock turtle. And they say, what is a mock turtle? And they say, well, that's the thing you make mock turtle soup out of. And the other origin I heard is that since you boil a half of a cow head, it looks a little like a turtle when you put it into the pot.
And do you actually begin with the cow head?
We actually begin by making veal stock. And then we saute veal cheeks and add that to that liquid and cook it another day. And then the next day we add a cow head to a half of a cow head to fortify the broth again. Then the next day we caramelize onions to add a little sweetness to the soup. And then on the final day when the soup is served, we add the meat that has been picked from the cow head, the beef cheeks, the beef tongue, the other veal cheeks, and we add seasonal vegetables. Right now we actually have peas and carrots and potatoes. And I find, you know, when we were creating the menu here, when I went to my purveyors for the things that I was looking for, like when we asked for a cow head, he was like, I think I can get you one. And I'm like going, I'm pretty sure every cow comes with a head. But, you know, it took some time, and, you know, it is a lot of work. But, I mean, the end results, I think a lot of people get intimidated by it. But in 1880, there would be a line for this mock turtle soup.
Well, I'm relatively fearless when it comes to food. So
don't be afraid of food.
That's good. Yeah. Had you always been interested in sort of historical recipes, or was this your first entrance into that?
I would say I'm a bit of a history buff, but I would say that most cooking, you know, is all based in tradition, that the dishes have, you know, most dishes have been around. Maybe the new molecular cuisine, obviously, is something different. They weren't cooking with liquid nitrogen and stuff like that, but, you know, a lot of the recipes and the things that we think we eat, I mean, we've been eating for centuries, you know.
When you were looking at various eras and actually even geographic locations where the books came from, what were the kind of recipes that really caught your eye?
Well, I guess what caught my eye was the total use of everything that was available. That, you know, there were recipes for all parts of the cow and, you know, also preserving everything. So they're really, to me, I look at them as the first self-help books because you had to have a plan. You know, it's not like you could just walk over to Whole Foods and buy whatever you wanted any day of the week. You had to, if you had a cow that you were going to slaughter for that winter, you had to plan to keep your family alive. And a lot of this was done through the community, too, that, you know, different people were doing different things to help perpetuate the society because, you know, just like here in Boston, I mean, when they first landed here, it was very warm, but then it gets extremely cold. And if you don't have a plan, you know, you won't be able to survive. And that's what really caught my eye in the cookbooks is that, you know, there really isn't a lot of recipes for beef tenderloin. There's more recipes for oxtail and, you know, braising brisket and, you know, mock turtle soup, braising the cow head, because that was more important. That's what's more difficult in cooking. It's not very challenging to just heat a piece of tenderloin and make it taste good.
You know what really gets me about these old recipes is that it's a paragraph.
Right.
There isn't an ingredient list on one side and then a bulleted, you know, like a bulleted list of step-by-step instructions. It's literally like it's written out as a big long paragraph, beginning with, have the head nicely cleaned, divide the chop from the skull, take out the brains and tongue, and boil the other parts till tender. And then you keep reading until...
That sounds all very simple, but until you try to do it, it is very, very involved. And
that's
again,
a whole day's work right there, Brian.
I think the commitment to taking the time to making a good meal was there, and maybe today that's what we should expect from our restaurants, is that they're going to take that extra time to make that dish, because we don't have that time to make it at home. You know, we don't have that luxury anymore. So, you know, again, I think it holds chefs and restaurants to a higher bar.
Well, thank you so much for giving us a tour of the menu, of your techniques, and what you're doing here at Kitchen. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much for stopping by.
Scott Harrett is the chef owner of Kitchen in Boston's South End. Pictures of his mock turtle soup are at RadioBoston.org.
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air.
And we'll end today by remembering Patti Page. She sold more than 100 million records in her lifetime, making her the top-selling female singer of the 1950s.
Tennessee Waltz may have been her biggest hit, and How Much Is That Doggy in the Window may be her most memorable, but for New Englanders, Patti Page will forever be remembered as the singer who captured the beauty of Cape Cod in song.
If you spend an evening, you'll want to stay
on Cape Cod Bay,
watching the moonlight on Cape Cod Bay.
Patti Page died at the age of 85 on New Year's Day.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at Boston.com. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.
You're sure to fall in love. You're sure to fall in love.